Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Chris Clark, Nick Gillard and James Howard of the Back of the Nest podcast. James, you're back. We had him for a week. It's like Kim Chalstrom going to Arsenal. We signed him. He was fantastic. And then he immediately disappeared off on holiday. How was it?
It was fantastic, yeah. I did need a break after that one show. It took a lot out of me.
I have to see him every week.
And he hasn't had a break yet.
No, I was off last week because you weren't here.
That's true. Well, it was conscientious objection, wasn't it? It was protesting against my absence. And we've had news left, right and centre because we now know the genders of Nick's mighty kittens.
Yes, and the girl is called Constantine.
Constantine. So that's a change since last night when you rang into the Arsenal show and we had no names at that point.
No, the kids have decided.
Where did Constantine come from?
My eldest is doing A-levels. He's probably got it from a book somewhere.
Okay. You shouldn't trust books. I've heard they're troubling.
But the last one, it was lucky she wasn't called Attila the Hun.
Tilly for short, presumably. Yeah. And we have a new face, at least for me, in the form of Chris Clark. Welcome. Lovely to see you. Were you there to see Arsenal capitulate?
Sadly not. I wish I had been. I've been every time we've lost, and I missed this one.
That's often the way. Well, Nick was complaining last night that if you're a Palace fan who goes to the home games and not the away games, you've not had the best of seasons.
No, I was at Highbury the last time we beat them at their ground, though.
Which was 1994.
Yes, sat in the famous clock end with the Arsenal fans.
Keeping very, very quiet, presumably.
No, we went doolally. If you look back at the footage, there's about 9 or 10 Palace fans
just jumping up,
going mad. Yeah,
brave.
I'm one of them.
Very brave.
I think I was there at that game as well. Yeah. And was it Salako scored 2?
Yeah.
And who scored their goal?
Go on.
Ian Wright.
Was it? Was he playing? No, because I was there when we got relegated by him. And Ian Wright scored and kissed the badge and I went off him for a bit.
Just a bit. You back on him now?
Yeah.
You forgiven him? Lovely. Yeah. Well, given it had been so long since there was last a win for Palace against Arsenal, were you surprised to get the 3 points at the weekend?
I was very surprised. I was, watching the games even though I was away on TV, and I was very pessimistic. We'd had three, what I felt was very poor displays, very negative. We did get the result at Newcastle, which was great, but I was very, very pessimistic, and it was happy days again. It was, oh, wow, what's happened? Is it the manager? Is it the team? What have they done? They've just come out and from the off, front foot forward, fantastic display. Win at Arsenal was amazing. But that's what they can do on their day. Palace are a good side and got good players and can really turn up, as we've seen at other grounds like Man City and Liverpool this season. We can score goals away.
So do you all think this was a case of Palace performing particularly well? Or did Arsenal get things a bit wrong? I mean, Nick, you were talking about stats last night, 27% possession for Palace, and yet still a huge number of shots and indeed shots on target.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. It shows that Roy's got his tactics spot on. A few people have hinted that the lack of Schlupp in the lineup may have helped.
Chris, I'm interested to hear your take on both how Roy approached the game at the weekend and your thoughts on Roy in general, because we've had some varying views here on the show over the past couple of months. Where do you stand on the weekend and more broadly?
Right, okay, let's start with the weekend. I'd bank 0 points from this game. You know, that's what you assume, isn't it? When you're playing a top six side, you expect your club to lose, frankly. But you know, from the moment the game started, you know, we were on the front foot, we looked good, and that's what we are capable of. We've all known that we're capable of that, and I mean, I've seen more than my fair share of away wins because, you know, I'm lucky that I do go to a hell of a lot of away games. And frankly, if you are a season ticket holder like me as well, you've seen more than your fair share of home defeats and, you know, draws against teams where you really, really should win. We know we're good enough to do this, and, you know, I think on this occasion we were set up right. We had that ready. And I think Arsenal, there was a touch of complacency about them in terms of the number of players they rested. But Roy had the right setup. And I mean, it was a classic Pulis win, actually, frankly. 27% possession. But we had the chances. We were set up right. And, you know, we were able to break and take those opportunities. And, you know, we did that flawlessly. It was a plan well executed. And that's what Roy does. So, you know, moving on to the broader point of, you know, is Roy the right manager? Of course he is. We're safe already, and with games to play that could even see us qualify for Europe. That would be mad if it happened, but who knows?
So you've got absolutely no doubt that Roy is the man you want in charge?
Yeah, there's no one else out there. I mean, you know, unless Mourinho applies for the job, and I suspect that's not happening.
I want the Leeds manager, although I can't remember his name.
Marcelo Bielsa.
Yeah.
Is that just because you want to have spies hiding in the bushes at every Premier League ground next season?
Just what I've heard about him, he just seems like a top bloke who cares about football, knows his onions and gets the best out of his players. He's even got Patrick Bamford scoring, for goodness sake.
That's true, but then the criticism of Bielsa, which comes, I mean, it's been around for a long while, it was around while he was at Marseille, was that his teams get knackered. Because he works them really hard on the pitch, he works them really hard on the training ground as well. And so around Christmas, you get this drop-off. We hadn't seen that with Leeds this season, but we're seeing it now. It's
well, they
come
are
later,
now. Yeah.
And they have now potentially blown that promotion push. So perhaps, I always feel with Bielsa that, as you say, he's likeable, and he's certainly a character, but it might be a case of style over substance. And I think, Chris, in part the point you're making about Roy is that, in a funny way, he's the opposite. It's not style. And it will never be style, bless him. But there's a lot of substance there. It's a safe pair of hands.
Yeah, I think somebody mentioned it on the pod on Sunday that we haven't been tonked this season.
It's the technical term.
The most we've been beaten by is two goals, which is pretty good.
Yeah, you know, particularly when you look at United at the weekend.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Leeds. Man United slipped up. Arsenal slipped up. Chelsea slipped up last night. Another one of the teams didn't do so well. So maybe the jingle-jangle nerves are coming in. Sorry, I nearly turned into somebody who shouldn't really be mentioned then with the jingle-jangle, didn't I? With Jimmy Savile, he used to say that, didn't he?
It was nearly Bob Dylan as well.
Yeah, oh yes.
Mr. Tambourine Man. I was also interested to see the introduction of Ward in for Van Aanholt, who's a man who hasn't always been all that popular as a defender on this show. What did you make of that particular switch?
Well, I have to give credit to Nick because he told me a few weeks ago that PVA wasn't up to it. And I was banging on about how good he is going forward. But
which you were right about.
But quite clearly, he has been our weakest link. And as I do bow to your knowledge.
Thank you.
And it was a masterstroke because Wardy is very much more defensive and he has switched to the left back, although he's naturally a right back. But it gave us a lot more solidity and it allowed for Meyer to push forward. And I was very impressed with not only the whole team, but the defence. And full credit to Roy because it probably was quite a big call if PVA was fit. He just dropped in, didn't he?
Yeah. He's one of our longest serving players now, Joel Ward. Still not got his own chance.
Surely if you're unhappy with that particular state of affairs, Nick, you've got a right one.
We had a competition about 5 years ago for people to come up with a chant, and there were some good ones, but they never took off.
At the Eagles, it never took off. It's so upsetting. Well, Joel Ward, if you're listening, maybe you have to write your own chant, or if you have any particularly good ideas, you can get in touch and inspire Nick on 0208 70 20 558. It's also at LoveSport Radio on Twitter. Coming up, Wilfred Zaha, still loved at Crystal Palace. I suspect he will always be loved at Crystal Palace, but will he always be at Crystal Palace? Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
Wilfred Zaha has been the star man for Palace this season. He's been
lively,
he's been direct, he's a local boy, he's loved, and yet he came out earlier in the week and gave an interview which you could forgive Palace fans for not being delighted about. He said when he watches Champions League football, there's a part of it that frustrates him because he sits there thinking, well, I shouldn't just be on the sofa, I should be involved. The phrase he used is, I'm missing out. And appeared to suggest that he wouldn't object, shall we say, to a move to a Champions League club in the summer. First of all, guys, what did you make of those comments?
who wouldn't want to better themselves? However, as Roy pointed out in his press conference, if you're asked a question, would you like to play in the Champions League? You're not going to say no, are you?
True.
So, I don't know what you think.
Don't forget, you know, we had all this discussion last season, at the end of the season, where the money has to be right as well. The club are not going to allow him to go for less than what they value him at. You know, he's still under a four-year contract.
And Arsenal fans, not 45 million. That is taking the Michael.
There has to be a price. And if he does want to go, if those two match up, then maybe that's the time when he goes. But I'm just hopeful that he stays with us, because I think that if he was to go, then we could be in a little bit of bother.
Well, it's not for us to name the price, is it? Because we're not businessmen, with all due respect. Well, certainly I can't speak for you, actually, but, you know, I mean, I work in the public sector and I'm not interested in making a profit from this situation particularly. What I want is the best for the player. I want the best for our club. And, you know, I mean, frankly, he deserves to play Champions League football. I really believe that. And I will support him when he goes to play for another club in the Champions League. But maybe he could do it with us. Who knows?
We finished seventh.
Well, they could start in Europa League. That's a start. Yeah.
Win the Europa League and suddenly you're there. What happens, though, Chris, if the best thing for the club and the best thing for the player are completely different things?
Well, sometimes there's a standoff in those situations. I don't believe... I mean, I just look... I can look Wilf in the eye, and I don't believe that he's the kind of person who would allow self-interest to come first in that kind of way. Maybe. I mean, there's also agents involved, and obviously football gets complicated with that kind of situation. But I hope and I believe that, you know, Wilf is a more moral man than that. And, you know, I really do believe that.
His brother tweeted, I think, that he's not going anywhere. So,
what? Because the transfer window's not open for another couple of months.
No, yeah, maybe. No, I don't know, but his family's down. If he goes anywhere Premier League, it'll be Tottenham or Arsenal. Maybe even Chelsea. No, they can't. Oh, poor Chelsea.
Shame.
Can't buy anybody.
Well, they know what it's like to be Palace now, don't they?
Yeah. Or abroad, as you've said.
Yeah,
Germany.
I think Dortmund would be a really good move for him. I take your point about the morality, Chris, and I think the only angle that's really relevant for is they're not going to an Arsenal, not going to a Tottenham. I think if Zaha were to go to Dortmund, it would be a really good move for him. I think he would fit with that style of football, and also it would be respectful to Palace. But with him, I don't think it's going to be a case of him doing it for the money. But the phrase and the word that comes up again and again in that interview he's given is ambition. And actually, if he really is that ambitious, I don't think it's really selfish to go, you know what, I love Palace, I've done my bit for Palace, but I need to step up a level now.
And if that's what it is, then I think we all support him too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'll be as heartbroken as I was when Vince Hilaire left, and I cried a lot because I was only 9.
Maybe that could be the name of one of the remaining cats.
We're getting rid of 2.
Well, you could name them and then go, sorry, he's got a weird
Wilf.
Ex-footballer's name.
Yeah, he's called Wilf. Wilf and Vince.
Wilf's a good name for a cat.
Yeah.
But if we're accepting that Wilf, the player, and indeed Wilf the cat, it sounds like, will be off in the summer, what's the figure you would take for him? And I'm talking now about the player and not the cat, because I imagine we're many tens of millions apart in terms of figure.
Well, I don't really want to think about him going off in the summer. I think he's settled here and he's got a young lad, I think, a very, very young boy. And I think when you've got a family, you're starting a family out and... got a partner or wife, you don't want to go abroad and a big upheaval. So I'm convinced that he'll stay here, and it may be that a London club comes in. And I know last summer, was it Tottenham, were pitching at maybe 50 million, and we were saying no, he's not going for less than 70 or 80.
Do you think he's a 70 million pound player?
I didn't. I said, if I think I said the other week, because he missed 2 glorious chances. And I said, if you're going to be a 70, 80 million pound player, you've got to put those away every week. And he's not. He still misses sitters. But he's still very skillful. He's at a good age. But maybe the club will still hold out for a bigger sum, like 70 or 80. Say, look, to us, he's worth 70, 80 million. But maybe to Tottenham or Arsenal, they might push up to 60. And I think... hopefully, I'm hoping that we just will say, no, we're not prepared to sell him at that level is worth more than that to us.
So the figure that's being reported in the Daily Mail in the last couple of days is 80 million. I think I would be baffled if a team paid that, to be honest. I appreciate that he's worth that to Palace, but 80 million English pounds.
Was that the report that linked him with PSG? Could you imagine him, Neymar and Mbappe together?
If all three of them stayed fit.
That would be scary, wouldn't it?
So the report I read that I think is the most encouraging one for Palace is by Adrian Kajumba in the Daily Mail. So that's saying that 80 million quid is the fee, and that if he does go, Palace would look at Jack Grealish of Villa. Would that be a potential replacement where you'd look at him and go, well, OK, Wilf was potentially irreplaceable, but Grealish would come close?
You can't replace Wilf. Like for like, he's been at the club for so long that we know how he plays, and that's a big advantage to us as a club. 80 million is a lot of money. If it wasn't my team or my player or our club, I'd probably say I definitely should go for 80 million. If I was a neutral, he definitely should go for 80 million. But I don't want him to go. I love watching him play. And I want to see him at Palace. And I think if he goes, we will be in trouble. And we will battle next season for staying up. Mm. So personally, yeah, I think if someone came in at 80 million, as if I was a financial man, businessman, I would say yes. But hand on heart, I wouldn't want him to go.
No, and there is also that question of what good the 80 million quid does, because it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money to reinvest, but Palace aren't going to be in the market for spending all that 80 million on a world-class player, because even if it might be enough to get one, that isn't the kind of bracket you'd be shopping in. So probably very hard to replace Wilf, however much he goes for.
Looking at our finances this year, we were 35 million in the red, was it? So we hadn't really sold anybody. We were all right the season before because of selling Yala or Bolasie.
And that's valuing Benteke at 35 million.
Yeah. So, I mean, if Benteke's worth 35 million, Wilf's got to be worth 200 million.
Well, we'll come on to Benteke in just a moment. And he might actually be worth rather more than we all think. I just want to touch on a couple of other comments that Zaha has said this week. One in particular about his time at Manchester United, where he alleged or suggested that various members of the United coaching staff, when he was at the club, had tried to, in his words, break him, which I thought was an interesting choice of phrase. What did you make of those suggestions?
I don't really know what that means, break him. I know he hated being away from his family while he was up there.
He was living in digs at the time, wasn't he? He was very unhappy. He was away from his family. He was living in probably a shared accommodation.
Who doesn't love a house share, eh? His own shelf in the fridge.
Exactly. He was obviously homesick. And he has sometimes, you know, people do have a go at him for sometimes having this sort of, you know, attitude on the pitch where he reacts too quickly with refs. And maybe they didn't like that up there, and they kind of like bullied him into sort of saying, well, you've got to fit in with us. We're not going to fit around you. And he was quite young and a bit naive. And maybe he just didn't settle because of those reasons, a number of those reasons.
I do wonder if Alex was still there, whether he would have made it at Man United, because he was the last player he signed and then he went.
Yeah, I've seen people suggest that would have made a big difference for Wilf. I can believe that it would have done. I don't personally believe for a moment that any professional coach would deliberately try to hamper the well-being or development of a player at their own club, build for big things.
Unless they're crew.
Or Chelsea, where actually, you know, there is, you know, a documented series of cases of profound bullying of players, especially, frankly, motivated by race. So, you know, there really is a problem with people having been treated that way. Now, can I say that that's what happened to Wilf at Man United? No, because I wasn't there. But I've had jobs where I've been bullied, and, you know, that felt like people were trying to break me. So could Wilf have experienced that? Possibly. There are well-documented rumours, which I'm not going to go into for legal reasons, about people who Wilf may have had a relationship with during his time there.
Yeah, very entertaining rumours, actually.
Yes, exactly. And I think I may well have sung songs about that at the ground.
Surely not.
At various points.
No, not you.
But people will be able to work out, I hope, and if not, then Google it. But you'll be able to work out what I'm talking about. But Wilf had a difficult time at United, and you know, we love to have him back here. Maybe he'll go back there and make a success of it, or maybe preferably he'll go somewhere else where he can really kick on. And you know, I think we'll all be together in wishing him the best.
Yeah,
I think a return to Manchester United for various reasons for Wilfred Zaha sounds very, very unlikely, and hopefully he will still be at Selhurst Park next season. Stay with us here on the Crystal Palace Fan Show, because coming up we'll be talking to Paul Price about that excellent walk from Selhurst to the Emirates at the weekend, all in aid of Calm, a really good cause.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Chris Clark, Nick Gillard and James Howard of the Back of the Nest podcast. And James has been away for a couple of weeks. We've talked about potential departures from Palace. We're now talking about returns to the Love Sport studio. And Nick is alleging that James can't have left his hotel because, and I quote, he's not got a tan. And Nick is claiming that he's more tan than James, despite having been outside for only one day over the weekend.
It's outrageous. I have got a tan, and if he wants me to provide evidence, then I will show him my white bits.
Dangerous.
You're all right.
No white bits in the Love Sport Radio studio. And for those of you listening at home, you'll be delighted to hear that we don't have a webcam, so you are all safe. But one man who really wasn't safe at the weekend was Shotgram Mustafi. And I had the guys from Gunners Town in last night for the Arsenal Fan Show. And they're normally pretty mild-mannered. You know, we all support our clubs. We support the players who play for our clubs, regardless of how they get on. You know, no player is trying to sabotage you, and you feel for them whatever happens. But they had basically had it with Mustafi. They were saying, get him out of the club. He's a terrible footballer. He's not up for a scrap, mentally weak. All of these terms that always come out when a player has a bad game. For you as Palace fans, having seen that performance from Mustafi at the weekend, did you think that he was responsible for Arsenal's defeat? Did you think he looked like a terrible centre-half? Or was it just a bad day at the office for Arsenal generally?
Bad day at the office. And, I mean, frankly, you know, he should have jumped and he should have been in the right place when Benteke scored. And he should have been more physically able when Wilf was musting past him. But, you know, those were good goals.
The Wilf goal is a good finish, but I personally would argue that it's a woeful defensive error. Mm. It's not a case of just not being strong enough. It's being completely misjudging where your goalkeeper is, completely misjudging who you're up against, where you should be standing, how you should position your body. I thought he got it wrong on pretty much every level.
True, but a normal number seven running through in that position probably wouldn't have had the wherewithal, in my opinion, to drop the shoulder and do what Wilf did in that situation. So, you know, normally you'd get away with that mistake, albeit that you'd then look across and wipe your brow and have a bit of a laugh about it.
Get shouted at by your goalkeeper.
Yeah, whereas in this case, he's had hell, and understandably so, ever since.
There was no way that the keeper was going to make that ball, was there?
No
way that he was going to get out there, and he blamed the keeper. You can see him blaming the keeper. What got me was the fact that, and I listened to the Arsenal show last night, as I've said, they were blaming the fact they had a defence that didn't really know each other. So did we. Mm. We coped.
And you had a right back at left back as well.
Yeah.
It was a classic case of them, a big club, underestimating us. And secondly, the other classic case of them having a big game midweek. We had more rest, more preparation, and overall, we just got there in the end and we won it, and all fair and squarely. We were on the front foot and they weren't from the beginning of the game, and it was too late. They couldn't catch up.
Hard for them to come back in that context. I was concerned by all kinds of things about that Arsenal performance. One was the midfield, and I find it very interesting with reference to the Palace midfield, something we've talked about a lot. who needs to play, who doesn't need to play. Is Max Meyer the creative force that is needed? Because in the two gloriously haired, it has to be said, men in the form of Elneny and Guendouzi, Arsenal just seem to have a very lackadaisical midfield, a lack of bite, a lack of both pace physically and pace with the ball, looking to move it forward. Who, for you, in that Palace midfield was central to exploiting that?
Meyer looked boss in the first half hour. He seemed to be running everything for Palace. But then Kouyaté was strong. He was covering when one of the wing-backs went forward, so we were almost making a back three. He was carrying the ball forward quite a bit. Jimmy Mack had a brilliant game. He's always in and about, getting the tackles in. It's somebody mentioned that we did well because Schlupp wasn't in the lineup, and because he tends to drift out of games, we didn't have anybody in there that drifted out of the game, so we had the full 11 on the pitch all the time.
So I think that's harsh. I really think that's harsh on Schlupp. Schlupp has a place, and he deserves that place when he's fit, and in this case he's injured, he's out for the season now, but he can play the same role that Luka plays and that that Kouyaté plays. They are all, I would say, interchangeable. Yeah, probably Kouyaté and Luka would be the first choice too, frankly. But if you're playing a slightly more defensive left winger, then you know Schlupp fits the bill for that, and you know maybe Wilf plays on the right in that case. More often than not, actually, we obviously have Townsend and Wilf playing. But if you're making those change rounds, then, you know, for me, you know, Schlupp definitely has a place in the mix. He didn't play on this occasion, but he could have done in the place of either of those defensive midfielders and would probably have been part of the solution rather than part of the problem.
Indeed, and he's always good at covering back. He gets back quick. He's very, very quick, and he's a better tackler than PVA anyway.
Yeah.
But it's just the disappearing out of games for long periods. But then Darren Ambrose used to do that, didn't he? And then he'd come up with one or two worldies, and he was everybody's favourite player. So,
you know, Hodgson made a little bit of a mistake, I think, which was Max Meyer had a very good first half, very attacking, linking up with Zaha, and we were 3-1 up in the second half, and he should have taken Max off. Because it was Max losing the ball in midfield that led to their goal. And pretty much immediately he was taken off after that. So I think there's a place for, still, we were talking about this a few weeks ago, there is a place for Meyer at the club because he is a very positive, attacking, skillful player. But I think we have to be very cautious in the fact that if we do get a lead, especially against a strong side, that we think, you know what, we know what Max is capable of, we know what he's good at, but we know what his weakness is. He might lose the ball in midfield. So I think Roy will learn from that. And
is there a worry, though, James? Because I think you make a really, really good point. But if Roy and you as Palace fans can learn what his strengths are, what his weaknesses are, is there not a concern that other managers are going to look at Meyer and recognise that weakness? And when he is playing, play perhaps more combative, scrappy central midfielders and just pile onto him and nick the ball constantly?
Yeah, well, second half, he was sort of playing a bit more central because we were 3-1 up. So probably Roy was saying, you know, can you play a bit more central? We don't need you out wide. We want to sort of close up shop. We want to keep the two goal advantage. So it shows that the first half, when he was had the ability and he was given the permission to attack and go wide, it worked. But I think if the tactics are going to change, he won't be there. He won't be your central midfield player that's trying to sort of step on the ball and keep hold of it and not lose possession. So I don't think it's a big problem. I think Roy will realise going forward what he needs to do, that he needs to bring on Kouyaté or another central midfield player to just shore it up a bit. And Meyer will also have to improve his game in that respect and make sure he doesn't give the ball away.
Do you think he'll be better next season once he's had a season to bed in?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, it always takes these foreign players a season to bed in a Premiership. It's very, very fast, as we all know.
Premier League.
Well,
that's rugby.
The ability. You've only got to look at the Champions League game the other day.
Yeah.
I mean, what an advert for the game and the Premiership.
Terrifying stuff. Very, very hard to deal with. If you are new, if you're not used to it, it's something that Jurgen Klopp has said a lot about in terms of moving from the Bundesliga, and not just in midfield, but with goalkeepers as well. The entire culture is different. There is more physicality all over the park, in the box, in midfield. And Maya will, as you both say, I think, benefit from getting used to that. There was another major talking point, which, of course, involved a certain Mr. Aaron Wan-Bissaka, who we don't like to talk about on this show because he's average. But coming up, we'll be asking you, was it a handball?
This is Love Sport.
You've seen him given. It's a cliche, and we hear it again and again and again. Sometimes they go your way, sometimes they go against you. And did Palace get a little bit of fortune against Arsenal with a certain incident involving Aaron Wan-Bissaka?
I was talking about this before the game. In real speed, it's going to be very difficult for him to avoid it hitting him. And I think the way he was turning, his arms were in a position where he was trying to turn, but it wasn't deliberate. And I think it was so close to him that there wasn't a lot he could do about it. I suppose there's the argument that his arms were up a little bit. But thank goodness we haven't got VAR, because it would have spoiled a good game.
Well, it's the natural reaction that anyone would show when hit, you know, targeted by a ball from such close range. And this is what's going to happen next season, is that VAR and the referees and the panel that are looking at it are going to look at it in slow motion. And I don't think that's... I think they have to take into account that it is slow motion. It's not real speed. So they'll probably will... I personally did think if it went to VAR, that would have been a penalty. I don't know what the other guys think.
I completely agree with that. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, one of the phrases you always hear when these things are given or when they're not is, were his hands in a natural position? And clearly they weren't. On the other hand, did he move his hands to try and touch the ball? No. But, you know, intent is not the point. The point is, you know, you can rightly say it was ball to hand, and it was. But, you know, I mean, as you've said earlier on, you know, you've seen them given many times, usually against the smaller clubs. So, you know, I mean, for once the cookie's broken our way, and, you know, I'm not going to cry about that.
These swings and roundabouts, perhaps they should introduce some sort of straitjacket kit so they tie their arms round the back and then they can't handball anything.
Well, John Moss seems to have that normally when it comes to cards. But
might make it quite hard to slide tackle as well, or indeed take throw-ins, which for a fullback could be a problem.
I hadn't thought of that. Good point.
unless we had a really elaborate system where the physio would have to run on, take the straitjacket off, he could take the throw in, and then quickly strap him back up again. All sounds a little bit difficult to me.
No, you just have very, very long sleeves, and you just tie the sleeves around, but you don't need a specific straitjacket.
You've got strange imagination, you guys. I'm getting a bit worried here.
You should definitely get a special one for Neil Warnock, though, right?
Yes, I think so. And probably a muzzle while we're at it. The other argument about Aaron Wan-Bissaka, of course, involves the PFA Young Player of the Year shortlist, and the fact that Mr. Wan-Bissaka is not on it. And there is outrage, not just amongst Palace fans, but football fans in general.
Yeah, well, I'm shocked at this. I was saying to you, I saw on the media outlet that it was posted with all the faces of the players in question that were nominated, and Wan-Bissaka wasn't. And the first response to this link was, why isn't Wan-Bissaka there? And it was about 800 likes. I've never seen Palace get 800 likes on you know, a media outlet. And I think genuinely people are gobsmacked, because he doesn't put a foot wrong, and he hasn't done all season. And I know I was working in Sheffield up until the new year, and working with a lot of football fans from Manchester, both the clubs, Leeds, Sheffield. And I got a lot of views from people that are not Palace fans. They haven't got any animosity against us. They're not from London. And they clearly respected the fact of how good this young lad was, and they were putting him in their dream teams and football teams. And, you know, I'm absolutely shocked that he's not nominated. I don't know about you guys, but I am.
No, I am as well. And there's a broader question, I think, about the Young Player of the Year award beyond just Wan-Bissaka not being involved, which is, how are we defining young? Because if we look at this shortlist, Trent Alexander-Arnold, okay, he's about 12. David Brooks, he's young as well. Rashford, fine. Declan Rice, fine. Irish Young Player of the Year, no less. And England International have some of that. But Bernardo Silva is in his mid-20s. Raheem Sterling is in his mid-20s and is one of the front-runners for the Player of the Year award. Surely, you look at that, you've got any sense, you go, you know what, Raheem, you're probably going to be PFA Player of the Year. I don't think you need to be in the running for the kids' trophy as well. Let's give Aaron a go. Surely.
I do hope Sterling wins that.
I hope he wins just, the Player of the Year.
Just cause for paying Damari's funeral costs. Yeah. Is, you know, his utmost respect and gives two fingers to everybody who's been slating him all season.
No, he's a fantastic player, fantastic man off the pitch, but he also is in his mid-20s.
And he looks like a T-Rex when he runs.
Well, there is that as well.
According to my son.
But I don't know. I think where you've got young players banging on the door for opportunity, you don't help anybody by giving the older guys the chance to win the prize. I mean, we've seen it before where someone's won PFA Player of the Year and Young Player. I think Hazard's done both. Bale did both. Ronaldo did both. What is the point? If you're the best player in the world, don't give him the award for the teenagers. Recognise somebody else. But for Palace, perhaps it is good news longer term that Wan-Bissaka's not in there, because as we always say on this show, he's our average wing-back. He's mediocre. Let's just temper all of this praise ahead of the transfer window and try and minimise interest in him from elsewhere. And this and the reduced media coverage that comes with it could potentially be good news long term. Coming up, there's a big question for Palace to answer now. Batshuayi or Benteke? And on the line, we will have Neil Shipperley, former Palace forward, to give his view on the current crop of strikers.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Chris Clark, Nick Gillard, and James Howard of the Back of the Nest podcast. And I'm delighted to say that we're also joined on the line by former Palace centre forward Neil Shipperley. Neil, evening. Thanks ever so much for joining us. You're a man who knows a thing or two about scoring goals, and I've got to get your take on Palace's current crop of strikers. Benteke found the back of the net at the weekend, and now with a couple of games to play for the rest of the season, would you go with him or would you go with Batshuayi?
Well, yeah, first and foremost, good evening. Right, well, I mean, look, let's get a few things straight. I mean, I've criticised Benteke over the past sort of season or so, and I still think I'm justified on that regarding of what I've seen with him. But I've got to say, you know, he's done okay. You know, he scored when he came on the other day. He done okay, and when he's obviously the goal he's got against Arsenal, good free kick. It was unmarked. You know, I would expect him to score there. But the only benefit of having a Benteke instead of Batshuayi at the moment is, you know, he's a big fella, and for Zaha's second goal, he's done what good centre forward should do of that size. He's won a flick on. And I know you can question the defending, but Zaha's, you know, he will feed on them flick-ons. So I would probably go with him till the end of the season. And just, you know, hopefully he can build more on his confidence.
I think, you're right, Ships, how are you doing? I think we look more, I don't know, we just look more of a team with him in there. He's not prolific in scoring, but he just helps us gel up front. And he's really, really good at holding up the ball. He needs to practice on his offsides a little bit, but other than that, yeah, I'm happy for him to keep his place now.
Well, I mean, you know, he's done a couple of good flicks the other day and stuff, and, you know, he's winning headers, like I said earlier. I mean, the one thing we've got to be careful of is, you know, we're not talking about an 18-year-old youth team player coming in and you know, and applauding him for doing this stuff. This is the kind of stuff I expect him to do.
Yeah.
And he hasn't been doing it, so you'd have to forgive me for my non-excitement at the moment. You know, these are the kind of things I wanted him to do anyway, and I am glad he's doing it, but I don't think we should be getting, you know, too excited about it.
What's going on with him psychologically, do you think? Because, you know, they all have barren spells. I mean, how hard is it as a striker if you're not finding the net? Do you lose self-belief?
Oh, yeah, it's terrible, yeah. I mean, I had a 15-game run, I think, when that season we got promoted. I just couldn't find the net, but the one thing I did do is work hard. You know, I worked hard, and I'm a believer that you prove, you know, you make your own luck. So if you run around and do your basic stuff and you follow the ball in when someone has it, so all them kind of stuff, you hopefully your luck will turn. So with him, it's a little bit different. I want to see more of him running around, a bit more of this, which I've got to say, I am seeing it now. So let's see it till the end of the season, and then we'll see. But I'm not going to get carried away, and I'd still probably like to probably sell him if it's up to me, and sort of reshuffle the forward line a bit.
What, get Grealish in. You're Steve Parish. You've paid a small fortune to get Batshuayi on loan. Do you not feel you're not getting your value for money if you're not playing him?
Yeah, good. I would agree with that. I mean, didn't we pay $3 million just for the loan fee? Something, you know, for the last few months. So you would do. I thought he started really well. I still like him as a player. I think he's a better player than Benteke regarding reading the game and little flicks, his runs, everything like that. But Benteke's got more size. So Batshuayi for me is a better player. We're now safe, so we don't really have to have that argument about we desperately need this, we desperately need that. So it's probably the end of the line, unless we can find the money to try and get the Batshuayi, which I don't know how much that's going to be, but I'd imagine it would be quite a lot of money, and it's money that we don't seem to have, or from my knowledge, I don't think we've got that much money.
Yeah, my understanding is we're going to be looking at Championship players rather than more expensive ones anyway, and hoping to develop them, so...
Yeah, I mean, we've only got three games left this season anyway. And, I mean, you've got to make that calculation based on who's the right player to perform. I mean, my question to you, Ships, is looking at the way that Benteke is performing, I mean, do you think that it's because that the lack of, running and chasing after balls, hopeless causes, that kind of thing, is the result of Benteke being lazy, which is that's what I'm picking up from the way you're describing it, that he's not making those runs, or is that a matter of managerial instruction? Because that's always been the defence that has been put by other people, is he's doing what he's told to do.
Right, well, yeah, I mean, I remember a couple of seasons ago with Sam Allardyce, and I read the programme notes and, reading it, and he said, we've done a lot of work with Christian over the last few weeks about running the channels. And I just thought, wow, that's you should be telling a £30 million centre forward to run the channels. You can go and get a League Two player that run the channels. I mean, I just think that's basic play. I never saw that with Benteke. I didn't see him making the real basic stuff. And he just seems to have gone downhill with confidence. And that's why, he hardly scored last season. And I know he got injured this season, but... So I don't think it's what the man... I mean, every manager I'd imagine in the world would love a centre-forward who's got his presence, got his size, can head the ball the way it is, but you want him to run around a bit more. Make these runs, chase lost causes. I mean, that's what Jordan Ayew, he done that when he first come on the scene, and all the fans went, wow, this is what we want. We want to get someone who's willing to chase and maybe nick the ball sort of 2 times out of 10 by chasing that. Not as nutty as Shang Long, but I mean, he's magnificent at it. But understand what I'm saying? Centre forwards that go around making a nuisance of themselves. When they haven't got the ball.
Neil, it's interesting you should mention Shane Long, because this evening's Premier League action has just kicked off. Of course, one game is particularly relevant for Palace fans, Spurs versus Brighton. That's still 0-0. Mm. But the relevance of Shane Long is that we're currently 4 minutes in Watford versus Southampton, and Shane Long put Southampton 1-0 up there after 8 seconds.
Wow.
Eight. How does that, as a striker... How does that even happen? Because, Neil, if I started running from the centre circle, I don't think I could get in the box in 8 seconds.
You wouldn't get to the edge of the centre circle.
Yeah, no, that seems crazy, doesn't it? Yeah, I don't know how you could score in 8 seconds, but no doubt we'll have a look at that later. And there's obviously, it happens, so there's a reason why it's happened, but I can't think of how in 8 seconds. No.
There's got to be a story behind that. Just focusing on what you were saying about Benteke, there, I mean, you've said sell him, and I mean that's a fairly popular view among Palace fans. So, I mean, who do you think would buy him? How much do you think we'd get for him? Who do we replace him with?
Well, the club needs to sit down. I think Roy and Ray have just done an incredible job with what they've got given. We haven't spent any money. So no doubt, you know, you've been talking about the Zaha situation of whether we do get the top money for him. Aaron Wan-Bissaka, I'm just trying to think of all these players that we can get big money for. Because end of the day, Palace fans won't like it, but the club's a business. And if we can't see any money coming in, i.e., you know, there you go, boy, we're going to have 30, 40 million to go and do what you want, which it might come out in the next couple of weeks, and we've got that. But if we haven't, we've got to start thinking like a business. And these players, if we get top money from them, we might have to do it. I mean, I don't know. I'm pretty sure we've got over three players on more than £100,000 a week. And I believe Benteke is one of them. So I would cut my losses with him just on the fact of that, you know, we can go and get other strikers, and I don't think they'd even command anywhere near that money. So we're going to have to start sort of shopping around, I think, unless something comes out recently or in the next few weeks that we've suddenly got all this money.
Yeah, I'm with you, Neil, actually. I do tend to agree with your comments. I think that overall, when you look at all the games that Benteke's played, he really hasn't done the business enough. And as you say, you know, the bread and butter of the game is missing. But I do feel with the Batshuayi and Benteke situation, I think there's two sides of the coin here. You play Benteke for the rest of the season and he scores every game or nearly every game, puts his value up. That gives us some money. Maybe we get some of our money back or most of the money back. It gives Roy a chance to look at the market over the summer if he still wants to sell him. However, if you play Batshuayi and you don't play Benteke, because I personally think Batshuayi is better, different type of player, but I think he's better. If you play Batshuayi, then it tells Batshuayi, look, we want you to join us next season. Whereas if he's not playing him, and he's a lone player, and I can see why they're not playing, but if Roy plays Batshuayi, then the argument is that, well, we don't really want Benteke, we're going to try and sell him, but we're sort of giving Batshuayi the chance to get used to us, and hopefully, if the money's right, he will be more inclined to join us over the summer.
Yeah, strongly agree with that. I mean, listen, this is where management comes into it. You know, Roy's not stupid. I agree with you. You know, play Benteke. Hopefully, let's get three out of three now and finish the season well and then get top dollar for him. All it takes is Roy to put his arm around Batshuayi and just say, look, we're hoping to do a deal. We do want you. So, you know, it might mean you're just going to have to sit on the bench. And I don't know Batshuayi personally. I'm sure he'd love to play football. But you've only got to look around. There's players on big money who are not playing. So as long as he puts his arm around him and tells him that, then I'm sure Batshuayi's going to be fine. It's only you know, we're at the back end now. There's not much to play for. And I agree with what you said. Yeah, big time.
Coming away from Palace ships, I mean, you're a bit older than me. No, not being rude or anything. I woke up this morning to the news. First thing I heard was Billy McNeil died. First British player to lift a European trophy. Do you have any memories of him from your own youth? What a big figure he was in football.
I wish I could. No, not really. I mean, I'm not that much older than you, I don't think. First of all, you really insulted me there. But
I'm sorry.
But no, obviously, no, I can't pinpoint memories of what he did. I just know his name and I know what he achieved and how much he means to Celtic and stuff. So anyone passing who's done that amount in football, it's a shame, and I hope you get the recognition he deserves. So, yeah, sad times.
It's a shame you've only got a minute left, because I was going to ask you what you had for your Easter dinner, because I've heard about your Christmas Day dinners. But did you have a good one?
I've done well, yeah. I've got a couple of lambs a leg. And
lambs a leg?
Leg of lambs, sorry. Leg of lambs. And I've done an Asian rub on one of them and a nice rosemary and lemon on the other
one. Is that a kind of massage, Neil?
No, I know you've only got a minute left. I'm quite this. I smoked a joint of beef in Mesquite. Mesquite wood chips, and I think there was something else, but you've rushed me now. But yeah, I had a very good Easter, and I loved my cooking, as you know. So we done well this Easter.
Neil, that sounds amazing. I can't get out of here for another couple of hours. Now you've made me really hungry. Neil, lovely to speak to you. Neil Shipperley there, the former Palace centre-forward and apparently chef extraordinaire. I wonder how many people he was feeding.
One.
Yeah. Come on now. Does sound delicious. I wonder, because the thing about Easter as well is because there's always the chocolate, to have a massive banquet of a savoury kind before that, you really are setting down a marker for yourself, aren't you?
Yeah, indeed.
I'm very, very impressed. I am genuinely very, very hungry. I've been undone by Neil Shipperley. A quick update from the Premier League action for you. It's 0-0 Spurs Brighton, and still 1-0 Southampton Watford. It's just come in. Shane Long's goal is being timed at 6 seconds. That is the quickest goal in Premier League history, and it's been scored by someone called Long. You couldn't make it up.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Crystal Palace fan show here on Love Sport Radio. And Nick is locked outside. He's gone for a cigarette. He's missed the news. And I'm inclined to not let him back in. So you're now listening to the Crystal Palace fan show with Johnny Burrow and Chris Clark and James Howard, only of the Back of the Nest podcast. I'm delighted to say that we are also joined on the line by Paul Price, who organised a wonderful walk to raise awareness for Calm from Selhurst Park to the Emirates this weekend. Paul, a wonderful idea, a wonderful cause to be raising awareness for. How did the walk go? Are your feet still hurting?
Oh, no, not at all. Thanks for having me on, by the way. Not in the slightest, to be honest.
How far actually is it, Paul?
Oh, it's about 13 miles, so it's
and
not...
And your feet don't hurt?
No, not at all. I love a bit of walking, so my feet are absolutely fine. So yeah, it's 13 miles. It was quite an easy trek. I've had a few people complaining to me on Twitter about a few blisters, etc. But no, in general, it was all good. Really, really good. Fantastic day.
And so talk to me a little bit about how you went about raising awareness for Calm. So for anyone listening who doesn't know what Calm is, it's a charity focusing on mental health with a particular spin towards men's mental health as well. So was this a case of just raising awareness for the charity, or was it a question of the people involved taking particular interest and focus on their own mental health, at least for the duration of the walk?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, both to some degree. So firstly, I found out about the charity due to a good friend of mine who was on your show previously, actually, called Lee. He's a Fulham fan, and he's been doing these walks for some time. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to help him with them and get them, get them going a bit more focused, a bit more out there with regards to distribution on social network and media such as yourselves. So the aim of the walk itself was to raise awareness for mental health and also male suicide, which is the biggest killer of men under 45 in the UK. Mm. Part of the reason we did it is, sad to say, we've all had a bit of a background in that. And as such, we felt inclined that we wanted to do something and make a difference. And the aim of the walk itself really is to demonstrate that it's okay to talk, to actually talk while we're walking. Some people talk about the weather or the football, or they might talk about their own mental health situation. So there's a whole thing there. We use the walk really as like a bit of a centerpiece, and then the social media that goes on around it is kind of where we get the word out there more, really. But it's a really, really strong, positive event.
Hello, Paul. It's Nick here. How are you doing? Good to see you on
Hello,
the telly.
Nick. I'm okay, thank you, mate. Yeah, not too bad. You managed to get in then, have you?
Yeah. I've known James was going to show his white bits during the break, and I just couldn't be doing with it.
No. But that's fair enough.
You missed the show, mate.
Oh, I good to see you on the telly as well, jumping up and down at the weekend.
Yeah. I don't know how I manage it, but I end up on there quite a lot. Yeah. So I was on there with some people I think a lot of, so that was lovely.
What I like most about what you're doing is the fact you've got rival fans doing it together. Is it difficult to get opposition fans to join in and become part of it, or are they really, really willing?
What you tend to do, and this has happened a few times, so I've done it with Lee, as I said, from the Fulham thing, and that was quite easy because I knew Lee and he was already doing it. I then had to try and get our own fans to do it. So that was quite challenging. Not in a horrible way, but quite challenging the first time around. We had about, I think there was about 76 mixed opposition fans on that walk. With regards to Arsenal, this was almost my first attempt at getting another club engaged myself. So what I did is probably a month or two ago, just started putting some stuff out there with a bit of a hashtag on it, and suddenly it got picked up. And then from there, it's just gone from like strength to strength, basically. I've managed to get onto some Arsenal podcasts, and some of the Arsenal accounts have been promoting what we're doing, which has been absolutely immense. And it's kind of grown from there. So As a result of that, you end up with some quite good numbers, and you also end up with a, you know, some real good quality people, some really lovely people that, you know, we've had a great time chatting and then actually doing the walk with.
And what are your plans moving forward? What's the next one going to be?
I'm not too sure yet. We're waiting for the fixtures to come out. So... so that you know, they can all be shifted around just at the last minute. But yeah, waiting for the fixtures to come out. I'd love to do another one, mainly a London one, to be honest with you. And that's not due to laziness, because I love walking. But you get, you know, a lot of the clubs in London, they're big clubs, and in many respects they're bigger clubs than Crystal Palace. You know, your Arsenals, your Tottenhams, those sort of clubs. You've they've got like a massive fan base. They've been in the division for years. So I wouldn't mind doing another one in or around London. But myself and Lee as well, just want it to grow and grow, really. I think it'd be amazing if we got every single club to do something like this. I think it would be such a positive thing.
It'd be a nice thing to do on an international break, wouldn't it? Get London Premier fans to do a walk together, so that every club.
It's funny you should say that, because I was just chatting to about that probably about 30 minutes ago, and I was wondering what we could do over the summer. So I think that would, you know, there's a potential there for something quite powerful, and I think that would also then allow you to have your foot in the door with the opposition fans. The main thing with the whole opposition piece as well is that, you know, football fans, one way or another, we get a lot of bad press. We're all hooligans. We're all, you know, doing this, letting off flares and various other things that we're accused of. But this sort of throws that completely back even at all of the authorities and anyone else who's got a bad word to say about us, because it's such a positive and amazing experience. It's just, I don't know, there's so much good in what we're trying to do, and that's what we want to keep doing.
Paul, we know that men, and particularly young men, are, for whatever reason, not talking enough about how they're feeling. They're not speaking up as much as they could be, even with the advent of hashtags such as "It's okay to not be okay." Do you think this problem is even worse with football fans? Because it comes with men often from this, you know, internalized belief that somehow we need to be masculine, and being masculine involves not crying, involves not talking, not being emotional somehow. And do you think that's something that football's got a problem with?
I don't think it's just football. I think football's a great one, because it's a perfect target area in that there is that macho side to it, but there is also that piece around men under 45. And I know that's only a section of that whole bigger picture, but I think if you just look at the sort of profile of who goes to football, it's predominantly a lot of men under 45 years old. But it does also scan ladies, it scans all ages. It's worldwide. It's just such a powerful way to be able to get a message out there. There's, you know, it's got worldwide coverage. So I think there is a massive problem with that whole sort of macho image of football and everything else. Mm. But I wouldn't say it's just that. I mean, mine certainly didn't come from that. Mine came from being of a certain age, having a load of pressures on my life. I wouldn't put it down to any one thing in particular, but I've only got one stress pot. And all of a sudden, at a certain age, and that age was just as I was about 30, so probably about 3 years ago. Don't say a word, Nick. No, I'm a little bit older than that. But, you know, all of a sudden, a lot of things started to come down on top of me, and I can sort of see that happening over and over again. You can see people out there that are probably going to either end up in that position or are in that position. And I think football, the reason we've done it with the football thing as well is football's such a, you know, such an icebreaker. I came back from, I think it was like Newcastle away, and walked into a pub completely on my own, because I tend to do that occasionally. And straight away, started speaking to these two guys at the bar, and one was a Tottenham fan and one was a West Ham fan. And, you know, it's just there. You can start that conversation off. And I think for some people, taking that little jump is, you know, that's quite daunting. But, so just to answer your question, I don't think it's just football or football's any worse, but there is definitely that macho side. So that, you know, that's the one negative about it, I suppose.
Well, Paul, it's a wonderful thing to be raising awareness for. It's a wonderful thing to be encouraging men to talk. Thanks ever so much for doing it. And if you do another walk with one or more London clubs, give us a shout, because we have a show
here for
every London club. And it would be lovely to talk again and help to raise a little bit more awareness for this charity. Lovely to talk to you. Thanks ever so much for joining us. That was Paul Price there, who was organising a walk in aid of Calm. That was from Selhurst Park to the Emirates, just raising awareness of issues that the vast, well, not the vast majority, but vast numbers of men, particularly men under 45, do struggle with and perhaps don't speak about as much as they should. So a wonderful, wonderful cause indeed. Talking is something that we like doing here on the Crystal Palace Fan Show, sometimes about our emotions, often about Palace. And coming up, we'll be talking about Palace, but we'll also be talking about Brighton.
This is Love Sport.
We don't mess around here on Love Sport Radio. We do not mess around. Nick Gillard doesn't mess around. It's the four-word reviews, and they've got a particularly sensual spin this evening, Nick.
Hello. First up this week, we've got Simon Pizzi of Back of the Nest fame.
James Howard, by the way, just can't even look. We've got eyes closed, we've got head in hands. I know that beating Arsenal is exciting, but I didn't think it was that exciting.
Big Ben, bulldozers, gunners.
Yeah, fair enough.
Next up, we've got Comrade Kev Roberts of South Africa.
Yes.
Vinny G, the keeper.
Okay.
Kevin, this is apt. Walk, talk, and win.
Yeah, bang on, bang on.
Bang on. Mark Ross, he used to be on our show many, many years ago when we first started. Benteke of the Nest.
Oh,
very
shocking.
Very good. DR Kernas, I don't know where he is this week. Getting a suntan in his kebab shop, we said the other day. He doesn't go out in the sun because he burns easily, but I thought he'd be immune standing next to that spinny lamb thing that he serves up, but no.
It's probably a lot worse than the sun, actually, though.
Yeah. But no Zaha, no party.
I thought he was going to say no Zaha, no problem, but there we go. Mm.
Darren Broadfoot, Arsenal got both barrels. Richard Tate, that's a Christian resurrection.
Oh, very good. Very good. Very, very good.
That's three words, Mr. Cadbury's parrot.
That's all right. He's allowed to be succinct.
I'll help you here. Christian Benteke can't miss.
That was easy, to be fair.
London Eagle is delighted for the lads. Nobby Clark, I'm still buzzing now. And in homage to Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, Dean Smyver said it's been a long time coming.
Yeah, and indeed carry on the Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young line. I think, Josh, we can get rid of this music now.
Is that a six-word review?
Thank God. It's
been
gone.
A long time coming. Yeah, it's five.
That's all right. We'll let it slide in. James is finally recovered.
I've just got one off the top of my head.
Okay.
Exciting times.
That's only three words.
Okay. Exciting times.
Now.
Okay.
A terrible
I'm
Easter
still
fun.
Thinking on my feet here.
James Howard inspired by the absence of music, which I think we're all relishing now.
White bit, lucky charm.
Oh, none of that. Enough of you and your white bit.
I'm going to leave soon.
We've got Premier League action going on right now. It's still Tottenham 0, Brighton 0. And let's turn our attention. I don't know how either. Tottenham really going at them. Matt Ryan, of course, doing a very good job in that Brighton net. Brighton, a club of relevance to Palace, because many of you aren't very keen on them. And there is now a debate emerging amongst the Palace fan base, because there's still the possibility that Brighton could get relegated from the Premier League this season. There are some who are so keen to see that happen that they're talking about other clubs throwing games against Cardiff just to keep the Bluebirds up, to send the Seagulls down. But there are others who say, hang on a minute, we want to be in the same division at Brighton because we want to have a scrap with them. Where do you guys stand?
I really don't know, because part of me thinks, much as I'd like Palace to be in Europe, it's undone Burnley this year. And, but
Brighton going down. I mean, we've got the Brighton-Tottenham game on in the background. I don't know how Tottenham haven't scored, but we are willing them to score. And for all their gloating after we'd got 8 points from the first however many games and they were posting things on Twitter like, mind the gap. It's just lovely, isn't it, to see them struggling. And they are choking. They look awful tonight. And I like Neil Warnock as well. I'd love to see Cardiff stay up instead of Brighton. But I know Chris is going to Ninian Park or whatever it is now. Where do they play now? It's not Ninian Park anymore, is it?
Oh God, I can't remember that. That's why I want to go.
I think it's the Cardiff City Stadium in rather unexceptional, unexciting terms.
At least it's not sponsored.
That's true.
Well, I mean, one of the reasons I want to go is because, you know, it's the last ground of a Premier League club that's in the same league as us that I haven't been to. So that will tick a box. But also, I mean, let's focus on this Brighton thing. I want them to go down. I so want them to go down. And yes, I want to go to that game. I mean, if we win, I won't cry because we've won a game. But on the other hand, if we lose, it really will not dampen my enjoyment of the day out.
So hang on then, Chris. If I offered you now, if you could choose by magic the scoreline of that game, would you choose a Palace win? Would you choose a draw? Or would you choose a Cardiff win and a Palace loss?
Cardiff win. Easy.
You would happily watch Palace lose to relegate Brighton.
Yeah. Very, very easy to do.
What's quite amusing is it's the 6 points they got against us that's helping them.
Yeah, and of course all three games, because you had them in the FA Cup as well, finished 2-1. With that in mind, James, you're shaking your head. I think you're of a slightly different opinion.
I can't believe what I'm hearing here. And I'm reading some tweets that have just been passed over by Nick. And you got Mark Ross saying, Brighton to be relegated, no contest. Who are you? Relegating Brighton would be lovely. I actually want a Welsh club in the Premier League. What? CPFC in the States, up the Bluebirds. Jason Babin, push for seventh. I'm a firm believer in celebrating success of my team. Yep, I'm with him on that one. Right, this is where I stand here, and a lot of supporters have been wishing for Brighton to go down. Now, don't get me wrong, they are our rivals, and whenever we play them, I want us to beat them 5-0. But to be rivals, you've got to play them. Come on, lads. What are we worried about? Are we worried about losing to them again next season?
We have lost to them three times this season.
Okay. You stop saying that.
No, but I mean, it is a serious...
I don't care, but stop saying it.
We move on. We move on. But the point is, you've got to play them to beat them. And, you know, our rivalry goes back to the 70s. And again, it's better to play these teams. I mean, look at the atmosphere it generates. Look at the build-up to the games, the talk and the fans and the aggro and everything, sort of, you know, it's just one of those games you don't want to miss. And I remember going back, I was talking to the guys earlier, and I remember going back to, I think it was the late 80s, early 90s, actually late 80s, when there were four South London teams in the old First Division. It was, you know, the Charlton, Mill, Wimbledon, ourselves. Is that four? I can't count.
Fulham? Were they there? No, Fulham were in the old North. Third Division then.
So you had the old Wimbledon, Millwall, Cheltenham Palace. That's four South London. But also that season, it was only one season, and I remember it, you had the most London teams in the top division. And it was great. I mean, it was derbies nearly every other week, but it was fantastic. I mean, you go into work, you meet your mates, and they're all talking about the games every week. And that's the banter. And it's football's not, you know, football's not just about 90 minutes on the pitch. It's about the build-up. It's about the banter with your mates or your colleagues at work. And you lose that. If some team like Brighton goes down and gets relegated, you miss that. And I think it's a big shame. Plus the fact I want us to beat Cardiff, I think, as far as I'm concerned, I understand it's £1 million a place in the division. So it's a lot of money at stake. And if we can beat Cardiff and move up a position or two, I know we did it two seasons ago. I think we moved up four places on the last game of the season. If that's worth £4 million, then you've got to play your strongest team. We've got to go out there and try and win every game, as far as I'm concerned.
I broadly agree with that, except that it's Brighton. Yeah, that's what it really comes down to, is that, you know, I mean, Brighton is a lovely city. It's a shame about that football club.
Where's their cathedral?
Well, it's Brighton and Hove is the city, isn't it?
Oh, right.
It's a bit of... I mean, actually, Croydon is a city more than Brighton is, really, in terms of numbers of people. That may get a few calls. and if it doesn't, that means you're frit, Brighton fans. So bring it on.
Well, I think you've got a new chant, which is, where's your cathedral? And I think the debate will rage on and on. If you'd like to join it, that number is 0208 70 20 558. And coming up, we're going to talk about Wayne Hennessy, and it's time for a Year 5 history lesson.
This is Love Sport.
Now, if you're listening to us, you might be thinking, I know that song. I've heard that song somewhere. And it's definitely got lyrics, and it definitely involves a German. And it definitely involves
Austrian.
I do apologise. I should have known that. And it definitely involves
Year 4 school.
A defective part. Well, exactly, because I and Wayne Hennessy, as I've just revealed, are claiming to be suffering from the same kind of problem. So the situation here is that Crystal Palace goalkeeper Wayne Hennessy has effectively been let off by the FA for allegedly making a Hitler salute. After his defence he levelled for himself was, I don't really know who Hitler is, and I don't really know who the Nazis are.
Although he has tweeted in the past about being at a World War One memorial, and saying how proud he was of our troops in the First World War. So how he skipped to World War, I really do not know.
World War One as well, a war, of course, that Hitler actually fought in. So there we go. I think this is baffling. We have a teacher in the studio in the form of Mr. Nick Gillard. And I said before, well, during the break, actually, that I cannot believe, and I will go on record and say that I do not believe Wayne Hennessy for even a second when he says he doesn't know. I'm not saying he made a certain gesture, but I do not believe for a second that he doesn't know who Hitler is, he doesn't know who the Nazis are, he doesn't know the basic history of World War II. I said it's a Year 5 history lesson, and Nick, you replied very simply.
Year 4.
Year 4.
Year 6.
Year 6. But, I mean, none of us left primary school without knowing the bare minimum, did we, about that period. It's such a fundamental part of our nation's history, of the world's history. It's such a strikingly awful thing that the idea that you know to perhaps wind a German up about it, you know enough to do that, but you don't... Oh, sorry, was there an atrocity involved? I had no idea. Come off it.
He hasn't even watched 40 Towers, has he? Come on.
Clearly not. Don't mention the war, Wayne. I'm delighted to say we're joined on the line by a caller. Nero is getting in touch. Nero, you would like to have a chat about Hennessy too.
Yeah, just to kind of add to what you guys have been saying. I mean, like, they teach us about this stuff at school from a very, very early age. I just found it absolutely... astonishing that he wouldn't have known who Hitler was and who the Nazis were. And I think, like, what we need to do now with this is that it's very, very easy to just get a head on a plate, that head being the head of Wayne Hennessy, right? And just go, oh, this is really bad, this is really bad. But there has to be some sort of positive outcome from this. And I think what would be good is if he did commit to going on something like
a Year 5 history course.
Well, a Year 5 history course, or perhaps the Holocaust Educational Trust or something like that.
My son went on that a few weeks ago, and he came back a changed lad. I mean, he's 16. He went with the Holocaust Education Trust, and he was ashen-faced when he got back. All right, he'd been out for 18 hours in the day, but he was shaking his head. He said, I don't want to talk about it. And I think it took him about 5 or 6 days to actually process what he'd seen. It was that. And I actually think everybody should go there. But yeah, definitely Wayne Hennessy should go there.
You've also got the Imperial War Museum just down the road from our studios here. Free entry. My daughter, in age 11, got to think about that. She went.
That's
on
a funny name for a girl.
She went they went as a class to visit the museum just down the road. And it's very educational.
Yeah, anyone who's been to any of these places, I've been to Auschwitz, and the idea that once you've done that, once you've visited a place like that, once you know even the fundamentals, that you would think it was funny. I just can't understand. Wayne Hennessy, to his credit, if Roy Hodgson is to be believed, is now saying that he's absolutely desperate, apparently, to learn as much as possible. So I think credit where it's due. You know, it looks like he has been very, very foolish. But as you say, Nero, the potential good thing here is an improvement in knowledge, an apology, and perhaps a improvement in the whole state of things.
The sad thing is, you are getting lots of football supporters going on marches, actually doing that salute in all seriousness, not as a joke, is a bit of a problem.
Yeah, you are, I mean, just to pick up on that again, I think it is, I think there should be, he should very kind of publicly go out there and show that he's done some education, and I think starting a conversation about this as well, starting a conversation about, for instance, the fact that, to me, look, I don't know the ins and outs of that social event that they had. I think it was Max Meyer's Instagram feed, wasn't it? Well, exactly. And was that locker room banter? I hate that expression, because that is not good enough. And look, you know, we've all seen it at school. This stuff has been normalized over years. And you know, if you see it in and around everyday kind of living at schools and pubs, and even in marches now, even in football grounds, then who's to say where it can happen? And I think you're right. Like, there are people out there. There are people who consider themselves football supporters who are going on marches and doing those salutes openly in public, and happy to do so as well. Obviously there's one particular firm.
I was in New Addington today, and I scraped two DFLA stickers off in Palace colours off of lampposts, and that made me really, really upset, because I don't want our club associated with those sort of people who, when you talk to them, they say they're white and white, and they only want the best for the country. No pun intended. But then you look at the people behind that group, and they're horrible. Absolutely horrible.
What can we do about that, though?
I don't know. Was it you that sent the letter to the paper, Chris?
I was one of a number of signatories, including Nero's on the line. It is an open letter, of course, so other people can sign it. Nero, do you have the link by any chance?
It's 1 second. I'll have to find it.
While you find it, I've just thought that Nero fiddled while Rome burned. I think Hennessy fiddled while Dresden burned.
I don't think Hennessy was probably alive at that point. I think the solution for anyone who's perhaps making any kind of ill-advised gesture of any kind, of course, Wayne Hennessy denied those allegations at the time. The solution is, as we've said, it's just education. Education is the solution. You've got to make people aware of the reason why this is serious, why it's not to be messed about with, and why actually it's not some kind of meaningless gesture. It actually holds very great significance and is related to very great tragedy. But if Hennessy educates himself, I think the least we can all do, I suspect, is move on. Nero, thanks ever so much for your call.
If Nero sends us that link, we'll put it on our Twitter later. Yes. That's at Back of the Nest.
Yeah, I think I've found it, because you messaged it to me a while ago, Nero. It's bit.ly/NoRacismCPFC.
Wonderful stuff. A very, very good cause indeed. Nero, thanks ever so much for your call into the show. If you'd like to get in touch as well, that number is 0208 70 20 558. And we had some sighs, some gasps in the studio, because it's half time. Spurs Brighton, still 0-0. And the reason why I've said Ali there is because Dele Ali just had a shot cleared off the line for Spurs. Could they still get that breakthrough against Brighton? Here is hoping. But coming up after the break, we will be talking to Paul McParlan. He's a senior writer at These Footy Times, and he's also an Everton fan. We'll be getting the Evertonian view of things ahead of this weekend's game against the Toffees. This. That's right, it's that time in the show where we turn our attentions to Crystal Palace's next opponent this week. Coming up, it is Everton, and I'm delighted to say we're joined on the line by Paul McParlan, who's a senior writer at These Footy Times and also an Everton fan. Evening, Paul. Thanks ever so much for joining us. Everton have been in cracking form for the past few weeks.
Yeah, things have really turned around, Johnny. I think yesterday's Sunday's performance was, you know, absolutely superb from start to finish. And I think just like Palace's win at Arsenal, we didn't get the credit that performance deserves because we absolutely destroyed Manchester United right from the off, and they didn't have any answers, you know, to the power and pace and skill of our team.
All right, mate. How you doing? How much of that was down to Man United choking towards the end of the season, like we saw Chelsea do last night? And I don't know, was it down to them being bad, or were you really that good? Is your new manager actually starting to get the results and the players are playing like they want him to?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of factors, but what I would say is we played some bad teams this season and haven't beaten them, but we raised our game against Manchester United. So although United, you know, you could argue they showed that they didn't perform to their normal standards, we didn't let them play to their game. We didn't let them play to their strengths. So right from the off, we were after them, we were closing them down, we weren't giving them time on the ball. And I think that was a major contribution towards Everton's victory. Also as well, in my opinion, Silva is gradually starting to get his philosophy into the club. One thing I like about Silva is, unlike one or two previous managers, he actually gets Everton. He actually considers that it's a big club for him, which, you know, is what we believe as well. And in my opinion, he's finally playing the way the fans want the team to play. They're playing with pace, they're playing with aggression, they're playing with skill, and they're playing, you know, with a level of finesse we haven't seen at Goodison for a while.
That's a word I don't associate with Everton. Sorry, finesse. But yeah, I'll accept that. They're doing well. So what are you thinking about Palace then? Because obviously, you know, we could still get seventh mathematically if you don't get any more points and a few other teams don't get any more points. Do you think we'll be on the beach, or do you think we'll actually give you a good game?
I think it's going to be a very interesting game, in my opinion. Palace's home form isn't wonderful, as I'm sure you realise. I think you've only scored 14 goals at home this season, whereas your away record is superb. One thing I was delighted about was that Benteke scored on Sunday, because I just knew he was going to score his first goal against us with him being next Liverpool player who's coming Saturday. So I was delighted he got that out of the way. I think Palace will go for the win, because obviously if you've got any outside chance of finishing seventh, you need that victory. But equally, with the way the Watford game's going this evening, I think they're getting beat 1-0 at the moment. That opens up such a unique opportunity for Everton to clinch that seventh place. And, you know, for us to finish in to get a Europa League place after the disaster that was the Millwall Cup defeat has been such a positive turnaround in our season.
Have you got the squad for a Europa campaign?
That's a good question. I know last time we were in the Europa campaign, I think we kind of started the qualifying in the middle of June or something like that. Yeah. But I think the qualification period has been rescheduled now. So my understanding is we only have to play one match to qualify for the group stage. So obviously there'll need to be some additional signings. There'll need to be some players with European experience brought in. But no, at Goodison, no, we had European football taken away from us. We are so desperate to see European football, we sent back to Goodison Park.
Indeed.
In terms of Calvert-Lewin's season, Paul, I'm still a bit bemused by him, because he seems to have the movement, the intelligence, the creativity of a top-class striker. And then you put him in front of a goalkeeper and he looks like a four-year-old. What's going on? Is he going to become a consistent finisher? Because he seems like he really could be a top player.
I would agree with you, Johnny. He has all the qualities, you know, to be a decent striker. It's quite apparent that he does need to improve his scoring ratio. However, the way the team is playing at the moment, his role is more to create opportunities for other players by chasing balls down, running into the channels, obsessing the back four. And maybe next season there might be more of a focus on creating opportunities for him rather than him creating opportunities for other people. I think one thing that has gone unremarked is that Duncan Ferguson has actually been working one-on-one with Calvert-Lewin, in particular in terms of improving his physique, improving his ability to dominate defences. And I think you can see the results of that in his recent performances.
Can I who are the players at Palace that worry you, other than Wilf?
Well, I think Palace have got a very, very underrated squad. I've always personally quite rated James McArthur. Every time I've seen him, I've always been very impressed with his energy, his commitment and his ability to contribute goals like he did on Sunday. And your right side defender, Wan Bissaka, been very impressed with what I've seen of him this season. Very, very good player, very capable forward. And obviously your penalty taker,
Luca,
who's only missed one penalty so far this season, which was against Everton.
Was it?
Now, there's a stat. And remind me, Paul, what happened in that instance? Did he miss the target or did Jordan Pickford get the better of him?
Well, it was the game in October, and it was quite a crucial point in the game because Everton were leading 1-0 when Palace got the penalty. And although Luca took the penalty well, it was a really good save in Jordan Pickford, and that actually changed the game because we went on to win 2-0. And I believe that at the time, if Palace had equalised with Palace's away record, I think Palace could have gone on to win that game. So Pickford's a very good penalty saver. I hope we don't have to face another penalty this weekend at Crystal Palace. But it was definitely a great save from Pickford and a missed opportunity for Palace.
Up until a few weeks ago, Pickford got a lot of criticism in the media. Has he improved? Is he improving at the moment? Do you think he's back to how he was?
Well, in my view, it's quite strange with the way Pickford's been treated by certain sections of the media. Most goalkeepers this season, the likes of Tottenham's keeper Lloris, Chelsea's keeper, have made mistakes that haven't attracted the same level of attention or criticism as Pickford's. The problem for Jordan was the one really bad mistake he made this season was in the Derby game against Liverpool in injury time that cost us a well-deserved point. And I think since that, attention has been focused on his errors rather than the fact he's a really good goalkeeper. And as borne out by the fact that I think in our last 8 games, we've kept 6 clean sheets, and you don't do that with a bad goalkeeper.
No, it's a very, very good point, Paul.
Last thing, Yannick Bolasie. I knew when we sold him to you, he was a brilliant player with no end product. Do you think you were sold a pup, and did you pay over the odds for him?
The answer to both questions is undoubtedly yes. we bought a 28-year-old who the forwards had no idea where he was going to put the ball, and B, he had no idea where he was going to put the ball either. So he was the most frustrating player to watch at times in an Everton shirt. Never had an end product. Always flattered to deceive. And I'm just telling you what you guys already know.
Yeah, he was wonderful to watch, though. I mean, there's always that clip of him beating the two Tottenham defenders.
With that extraordinary spin and flick.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But apparently at the moment he's doing really well at Anderlecht, you know.
Yeah, but I do quite well at Anderlecht.
True.
Paul, as ever, it's been lovely speaking to you. Just before we let you get going, I've got to put you on the spot, I'm afraid. Score prediction, how do you see it going?
I think this is a really, really difficult game to call. I think in the light of Palace's sort of a very underwhelming home record this season, I'm going to say we're going to sneak it 1-0.
Oh, he's a confident man. You've also just got less popular in the studio, Paul. But we will forgive you.
I expect nothing less.
Lovely speaking to you. Thanks ever so much for your time. Paul McParlan there, who's a senior writer at These Footy Times, and also, of course, crucially, an Everton fan. We've heard the Everton view, but coming up, it's time to hear the Palace side of things.
Is Love Sport. This is Love Sport.
It's the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with Johnny Burrow and also Chris Clark, Nick Gillard and James Howard of the Back of the Nest podcast. just coming into the second half now of Spurs versus Brighton, and we are all hopeful here in the studio, of course, of a Tottenham goal, not only because here at Love Sport Radio it is always your London teams first, but also because three of the four people here seem to absolutely despise Brighton and Hove Albion.
I'm looking at the goal difference between Brighton and Cardiff. You want Tottenham to put a few away, but they've done everything but score tonight.
Mm. And Brighton still don't have a cathedral, so 1-0. But we've heard from a Palace point of view, the Everton side of things, looking ahead to the game at the weekend. But in terms of how Palace should be setting up themselves, Everton are quite a frightening proposition at the moment. They're solid at the back, consistent clean sheets, as Paul McParlan of These Footy Times was just telling us, but also very, very incisive going forward. They made mincemeat of West Ham. They made mincemeat of Manchester United. Starting at the back, how are Palace going to negate that attacking threat?
I'd stay with the same back four, actually. Kelly was up for man of the match on Sunday, I thought. What we're good at is getting blocks in. I don't know what the stats are for getting blocks in, but we seem to get them in more than any other team.
Brighton
apart from
very,
Brighton
very
tonight,
high. Yeah, I was going to say Duffy in particular.
And give them a chance. And you've got players possibly playing to stay at the club. Whether we use Batshuayi for him to prove his worth, I mean, I'd love just for one game to see the two Bs up top and stick Wilf on the wing to get the crosses in.
The thing is, with Chelsea obviously having their transfer ban, I don't think they're going to sell him to us. So even if we do give him that opportunity, I mean, maybe if we want to have a go and, you know, be positive, I just don't think that's Roy's style. I mean, one, he doesn't change a winning team, and two, he likes to keep things tight. And I think that's what he'll do. He'll keep it tight and try and make it get to 75 minutes at 0-0 and then make it a 15-minute, you know, race to the finish line. That usually is set up, and you can tell that when in interviews and so on. Looking at our team, I mean, we've got, in terms of centre-backs, which is the only position where you'd seriously look at there being a change, the conversation we've had previously was, would you rather see Scott Dan start or maybe give someone like Sam Woods a go? I mean, after the performance that Scott Dan put in at the weekend, I can see, you know, you'd absolutely stick with Dan.
Just for the set pieces.
And also, I mean, he's a leader. He communicates well with the players ahead of him. They all know him. They trust him. Especially if you think back to the fact that now we've got Ward playing on the left. You know, they've got that historic relationship in terms of the way it works. So if we're playing for maximum points, then absolutely you have to stick with the team as it was.
I think I agree with that. It would be very, very unusual for a manager to change a team unless somebody's injured, change a winning team. But the only question mark I would have would be on Max Meyer. He had a great first half away from home, but if you remember the last home game, he had a dreadful first half and he was taken off at half time. Whether or not the pressure's getting to him at home, it could be at the back of Roy's mind to think, well, do I prefer to start with Townsend rather than Meyer? I don't think he will. I think it would be a bit damaging to his confidence if he didn't start with Meyer, but I think you could easily see a change soon after half time if things weren't going well.
I still say he's an impact sub at the moment. He seems to thrive when other teams are tired.
And there is a big question, of course, of the front line as well. We saw Benteke score, Batshuayi still on loan for now. What would you go for?
If we were experimenting, and I would like to see Benteke and Batshuayi up front with Zaha wide.
And Townsend the other side.
Yeah, I would really like to see that, especially at home. And I think that's worth a go because our home form's been so poor that we need to actually try and change things and experiment to see if something else works. Again, whether Roy's happy to do that and change a winning side, I don't know. But for experimental purposes, I think it would be ideal to try that on Saturday.
The only problem is you want to try and get a winning run to kind of carry you over to next season. And do you want to upset that? I mean, I know we've only won one in a row, but...
But James's point is quite a good one in the sense that if you're not winning at home anyway, the established order that's working away from home, for whatever reason, isn't working in the same way at Selhurst Park. So maybe roll those dice.
Yeah.
Well, we've got three games left. You know, one of them is this game against Everton, one of them is at home against Bournemouth, and the other one is obviously a guaranteed defeat against Cardiff. So, you know, we've got to focus on winning those home games, and, you know, then we can afford to throw away those 3 points, you know, in the way that, you know, a lot of us hope we do.
Talking of that, we're seeing... actually, there is a danger of a game of football breaking out between Spurs and Brighton. Brighton actually starting to look slightly more potent on the break as well. If Brighton do win today, does that ruin your mood forever?
No.
Yeah, well, they're an irrelevance, but I'd love them to be a proper irrelevance actually outside the league that we're in. They'd just be so much more comfortable.
If they went down, would you expect to see them in the Premier League again soon?
No.
I would if they kept the manager. I think he's a top manager. Brilliant manager.
What I would say is they are very, very dirty. So many fouls and cynical fouls as well I've seen in this first half.
Well, you say that. We've seen cynical fouls from Tottenham as well. Just a moment ago, Bernardo went on a wonderful, mazy, driving run through the middle of the Spurs midfield. No one can get close to him. He brushed Christian Eriksen aside, who just went, sorry, and grabbed his arm and dragged him over. So there's cynicism on both sides here.
Which is what the Arsenal player did with Benteke, wasn't it? Pulled his shirt, gave us a free kick, which led to our first goal. Is there anybody from Everton that you think is a typical danger man, and who could you put up against him?
Sigurdsson. Sigurdsson, 100% Sigurdsson.
And would you lock Kouyaté onto him or stay zonal?
I think you've got to put someone on him. I mean, the problem is Eriksen. Well, Eriksen's Spurs, isn't he? But I know, I'm thinking, you know, from back in the day. No, I mean, I'd put someone on him because he's so dangerous. I mean, although it's not so much from open play, it's not giving away those free kicks in that range where he can shoot.
And
that's
closing
the most
him down
thing.
On the edge of the box in the same way.
Exactly. So, I mean, the main thing for me would be make sure that, you know, you're actually tackling quite high and far out rather than... Yeah, and if you're going to commit a foul, do it nearer to the halfway line rather than waiting until they get near enough that it's dangerous.
You're also going to need to watch the pace on the wings because Richarlison is very, very nippy, very direct runner. Bernard is very hard to deal with. And also there is the potential of Theo Walcott, who despite being 53, does actually still have a little bit of pace. I think the worry for Palace, and I agree with you completely that Sigurdsson is the biggest threat. I think if you focus too much on shutting those shooting options for Sigurdsson down, the concern then is that Richarlison's in space or Bernard's in space. So there's got to be that balance between closing them in midfield, but the runners in behind, what we saw against West Ham, and those are the danger. The sort of diagonal ball slips in towards the far post, which then is just dragged back across and suddenly it's a goal at the far post. So I think at the moment... Everton look like a really, really frightening proposition, frankly.
And they are going for that seventh spot, and I think they're favourites for it.
Mm-hmm. I think, well, Wolves in the mix as well. It depends, of course, on how Wolves get on against Arsenal tomorrow night. The real question with that seventh spot, of course, is whether those teams will actually want it, because I know some people certainly see it as something of a poison chalice because your season starts incredibly early, your fixture list is incredibly condensed, and suddenly you're there going... Hang on a minute, is our squad actually only got 12 players in it? Which, of course, Tottenham are already operating with, despite running the Champions League.
See, one of the interesting things about this is I think that, you know, when you come onto a show like this, you're supposed to know what you think already. But we've had a genuine conversation, and I've changed my mind a bit now. I actually want Townsend to start in Meyer's place because I think we need a physical dimension and a threat that Meyer doesn't bring. Mm. Bring him on as a sub in the second half if we're doing well. And if it's still 0-0, you know, as per Hodgson's undoubted game plan. But I think we need that physical edge in this game. And the more that I've listened to what we've said tonight, I'm thinking Townsend to start ahead of Meyer. And I think, you know, I'm calling it. That's what Roy will do.
And is the tactic to go straight at him at the start? Or, I mean, is it too risky, as you've said, with the wait till the final 15 minutes?
Well, what I'd like to see us do is experiment a little bit with a slightly higher press, but keep the two centre-backs back deep. So that way, you know, you've got cover if there is a slip, but actually, you know, you're trying to take the ball and take it forward. I mean, I think we'll miss Schlupp. I know a lot of people have a downer on him, but I think he, you know, he would have been a really useful player in this game.
Yeah, every team's got a scapegoat.
That is very true. And I think the point you make about not allowing them to win that physical battle in midfield, particularly when you've got the prospect of, for example, Idrissa Gana-Gueye, is a massively good one. Because if Everton are able to walk through that Palace midfield, suddenly you are going to be up against it, however good a job you do going forward, because you simply won't have the ball. But then we saw against Arsenal that not having the ball isn't necessarily the end of the world for Palace. But gents, it's the time of the show where I've got to put you on the spot with your score predictions. How do you think it's going to go?
2-1 Palace.
2-1 Palace. Any scorers for me, Nick?
Benteke again. Ooh. And I think if Dan plays, he'll get one from set piece. And just to rub Everton's nose in it, because they were always trying to sign him 2 years ago.
And James, how about you?
I'll go 2-0 Palace. I think Luka might get his penalty.
Oh, and right the wrongs.
Maybe. And Zaha to get the other.
In a week where he has been, of course, in all of the headlines. Chris, what's your prediction?
2-1 Everton. I think that... realistically, it's highly likely that Sigurdsson will get through that defence. I mean, one of these nasty little people like Nias or Tosun will undoubtedly knock us out as well. And we'll probably get a Benteke goal. I think he's on a roll now.
It's a good chance for Palace, and fingers crossed for a Spurs win as well. It's been the Crystal Palace Fan Show on Love Sport Radio.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.